Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Sean Riley, President and CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group, and we're going to be talking about maintaining a strong, positive culture while your organization grows and develops. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I think that one of the reasons I'm so looking forward to today's episode is just because you and I have had a multitude of conversations about the things that you and Main Course Hospitality do as an organization to make your employees feel as though they're family, pretty much. So I'm really looking into diving into today's topic, and I hope that our listeners are able to take away some small things and then even some big things that organizations can do to really help their employees feel appreciated.
Great.
But before we even get into that, I'm sure there's some people who are thinking to themselves, I know a lot, but I don't know, what is Main Course Hospitality Group?
Sure. Well, Main Course is a hotel company. We have hotels throughout New England and in Florida. Well, currently, we have 20 hotels and one opening in a month. And another one opening in 3 months. And we have about 800 associates.
Okay, so 22 hotels in about six states.
Yes.
And 800 individuals.
Correct.
That's a large workforce. That is a large workforce. How many people are at the different locations or the hotels versus what your administrative kind of team looks like?
Well, our administrative team is probably the smallest in the company. We have, each hotel varies in size. We have an 80-room hotel or in a 139-room hotel. So we could have anywhere from 30 associates to 50 or 60, depending on the location.
And then how large is the group of people kind of here in Maine who are overseeing all the other attributes of the different locations?
In our office, we have 11 people.
Okay.
Three of which are on the operations side and the rest are on the accounting side and human resources, obviously.
So I think to a lot of people, it's a pretty lean organization generally because the people, that 800 employees is primarily the people who are on the ground dealing with clients and guests on a daily basis. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it is lean. I think one of the things that we have is a lot of great leaders out in the field as well. And if you know, we give, there's a lot, they have a lot of autonomy. And so we don't have to be there every week. We don't have to provide that. We just have to provide them a direction.
Perfect. So let's talk a little bit about what the organization's mission or values or general business theory is. I mean, you operate hotels, but I'm guessing it's more than just hospitality.
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because that's my passion. And feel free to cut me off if I talk too long. But I think our organization is built around our culture. And many years ago, we were known as a company with culture. Before I became president, our company was a culture-driven group. But I don't think we knew what that really meant. We knew we had it and people talked about our culture, but we didn't know how to articulate it. So we brought a group of people together, from people who've been with us for 30 years to 2 years to male, female, restaurant person, hotel person, and put them all together and say, what are we? What is this culture? Let's define it, figure it out. So we came away with the most important thing to us is our purpose. And our purpose is to positively impact lives. Now, that purpose is really the driving force, and it's much bigger than Sean Riley. It's much bigger than the previous president or even the leaders we have today. You know, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, that culture is going to live on because it's much deeper than just Sean. And I think that's what kind of separates us from a lot of places is that the culture is so important that we try to drive it through our entire organization. It doesn't mean we don't have bad eggs and we don't have issues, but that usually helps us through. And that's that positively impacting lives is the lives of our associates, you know, which is very important, the lives of our leaders, the lives of our investors, and our communities. So we really do. And then it goes back to our guests, which pay for all of that. So that's really, every time we have a question, something comes back, we go back to our value and our values and our purpose.
So when we talk about that value and purpose, is this something that during the course of leadership discussions or management or even in discussions with associates? Is it something that is talked about on a daily basis, or does it come up, you know, on a monthly basis? Or how often is this positively impacting lives? How often are we referring to that within the organization?
I would say, you know, in the middle of the heat of the summer when it's crazy, it's not every day, but we try to at some point, and we're assuming a lot of our leaders on the property are doing the same thing. I don't let a day go by that I don't talk about it. You know, we're trying to make a decision that we have these words, our four values, respect, integrity, fun, and family. And we have them everywhere in the office. And some people just put it up there for that reason, but we had a major decision we had to make one time, and it was coming clean on something with merit that had happened inappropriately in our property. It wasn't wrong. I mean, it was a mistake that we shouldn't have made. So we came clean with Marriott. But the leaders were sitting in a room, and we looked up at the wall and it said integrity. It's like, how can you have that on your wall if you don't come clean? So we did that. We made a mistake and it cost us some money, but it felt really good because we looked up on the wall, we saw what we did, and we practiced what we preached.
Do you think that having those visual stimulants there in front of you, it is something that helps to make sure that it's top of mind? I think one of the things that I like to focus on, especially when I'm talking to clients, is the idea of everyone learns and remembers information in different ways. Do you think having kind of those visual cues within the office helps to draw people back to remembering kind of what is important to the organization?
I do. I think for some. And I think you just mentioned, I used to be a special ed teacher, and one of the things you do is that people learn in different ways. And to some people, sticker on a wall is not going to mean anything. It might be that you pat them on the back and mention it. It might be some other way. I think you have to look at everybody for what they need and give them what they need. It's not, a lot of times, it's not the person who's receiving that's struggling. It's the person who's trying to give them whatever they want. And I think, so for me, I do want to see that visual. But for another person, that's just stupid. I think the other thing is that you can't have that stuff up and around if it's not practiced within the senior leadership, president down to every other associate. So I think that's really critical that that it's happening, because then it's just looked as, you know, what's the next flavor of the month? So I think that's why I talk about it everywhere I go. I look at opportunities to talk to people and share outside our business. I speaking stuff all over the country. And I love that because that's passionate to me. And when our associates hear that stuff, then they're more likely to believe it.
Is there a way that you recognize employees or associates when they exercise or focus in on one of these values, when their behavior is such that it is exemplifying integrity or respect or fun or family? Is there a way in which the organization kind of helps to highlight that behavior activity?
I think so. I think one of the things that isn't a blatant rule or anything like that. In fact, I don't believe necessarily in rules. I think they're guidelines, and we try to do the right thing. And sometimes a rule is going to stop us from doing the right thing. So you really have to reevaluate. I know that's not what you asked, but
I loved it. I think it goes to it, though. I think it goes to kind of how, as an organization, you have to be nimble and you have to evolve and pivot depending on what the situation is. So I think it does in a way answer it.
Yeah, we had a senior guy join us, and he came from Marriott, and he'd been there 17 years, and he says, so what's the standard operating procedure? What's the SOP? You know, he's used to books that are 5 inches thick. And I said, do the right thing. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, let's look at whatever you're talking about, and is doing what you're doing the right thing, and that'll be yours, but it might not be the same for someone else. I'm just going back to that, my old teaching days. So what we do is, for one, I think every general manager or senior leader does it in a different way, and that's good. Because they're not just saying we're doing this because it's a rule. We're doing this because we value what you just did. I mean, I write personal notes to people. I think that, to me, that's the old-fashioned way. I mean, I send emails too, and it's quick and easy. But sometimes just sending a note to someone at home, and I'm usually sending something at home if I can, if there's something that's really special. Because, you know, how many of us get mail? They only get a junk mail. If you get a little card that's handwritten, they can't read my writing. That's the fun thing. They have to figure out how to transcribe it. But, you know, if it says, you know, I really appreciate you taking care of Johnny or Susie, or that guest really appreciated what you did. And I think those are the things that kind of have an impact that says, wow, that's good. And so I think that's just breeding that behavior you want to get. It's like positive, you know, it's how to win friends and influence people. You know, you try to get the things you want by giving.
So we are talking today to Sean Riley, President and CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group, and we're talking about maintaining a strong culture while your organization grows. We've just spent some time talking about who Main Course Hospitality Group is, what their purpose is, positively impacting lives, and then kind of four pillars that they live by. So we've got this background about Main Course Hospitality Group, but tell me about the man. Tell me about Sean Riley. How long have you been with the organization?
Well, our company was a restaurant company for many years, and they acquired their first hotel, and they bought me with it, and I came with it. And,
whether they wanted it or not, you were coming.
Right, 31 years ago. And they realized, I think, after time that hotel did very well. We built a second hotel. And then from that, they said, okay, maybe we don't need this restaurant thing. So we kind of divested of restaurants, and we now have, like I said, 22 hotels. I was a former teacher. I went to school to be a phys ed major. Okay. So I never did that. I did teach special ed, and that's where I mentioned earlier, I learned an awful lot about dealing with people one-on-one and using people's strengths rather than focusing on their weaknesses, which is important in special ed. It's important in business. Then I get into hotel business, ran a 19-room motel while I was teaching, did all that stuff, and then came to Freeport. And that company grew over the time. I was been a front office manager, general manager, pool boy, maintenance guy, and all that. But I still can plunge a mean toilet. I'm not as good at the beds anymore. They've changed. They're not those shiny bedspreads anymore. You can't hide things like I used to. But we're also the director of operations, COO and CEO and president 10 years ago.
So I know you've mentioned the fact that Main Course Hospitality Group has these pillars and has this purpose, and that's with or without you, that's who they are. But what makes Main Course Hospitality Group the place for you? I mean, 31 years is a long time. Why is this home? Why does this feel right for you? Or what about your values succinctly kind of follows Main Course Hospitality Group's values?
Well, I think, you know, we have evolved. We love that part of what we were. And I guess I feel like I was in on the ground floor, especially on the hotel side. And I think I was part of that development of what we were. I wasn't the only person, but I was part of it. Probably about 10 years ago, I had an offer to run a much bigger company, and I had a lot more money. And I thought about it, and I think what I realized was what I loved were the people that I was around and the culture that we had. Now, it wasn't a money thing. It was really the culture thing. And I think we look at around our company, we have leaders that have been there 20, 30 years, some 10. So it's the only reason our average GM tenure is lower is because we keep adding hotels outside of the state. We don't necessarily have people within that can take it. But I mean, I think we're probably averaging 10 or 11 years per general manager. So that's what I love. I love the fact that I had an impact, that I did positively impact lives through that time, and that now in my role, I can just take that same thing and go further with it.
So when we talk about growth, I mean, it's interesting to hear about the organization's evolution first from more of a restaurant-focused organization and then into more of the hotel side of things. How quickly has this growth occurred? I mean, 31 years from one hotel to now 22. Is that more of a recent, like, hey, we stuck around at around 5 for a decade and it's only in the last 10 years that we've seen this growth? Or has it been a fairly steady increase over the course of those 3 decades?
Well, the first few hotels were not, it would be every 5 years or so. And then with spurts, sometimes things were opportunistic. You know, it's a purchase of a hotel rather than a new build. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a new build, and we're building one now that's taking 6 years to get out of the ground. So it varies. I think we are opportunistic, and we don't have a set growth pattern. And so I think the whole thing about our purpose is that it doesn't matter if we're in the hotel business or the home care business or nursing homes or anything like that or a restaurant. That purpose stays alive. It goes far beyond us and far beyond what we are today.
Perfect. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East, the 2020 presidential impeachment and election. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco has helped thousands of investors safeguard their retirement, especially in times of uncertainty. In fact, if you call 855-971-2006, Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin. And all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation, 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin. That's 855-971-2006.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking to Sean Riley, President and CEO of Maine Course Hospitality Group. And we're talking about maintaining a strong culture while your organization grows. Before the break, we talked about Maine Course Hospitality Group, who it is, what its vision is, and that purpose of positively impacting lives. And we heard a little bit about why Maine Course Hospitality Group and Sean are together, why this is a place for him. I'd like to bring it down almost to a foundational level, which I think a lot of people question, especially in the hospitality organization or industry. And that would be, how do you define hospitality? And do you think that that's different from maybe how other people in the industry define it?
I think that that term is, to me, is a little bit of a catch-all. You know, it's a great term, and it's better than the hotel business or the restaurant business, but... Yeah, I think what it's all about to me is that it's servant leadership for me, that I'm there to serve the people that I'm working with. It's not that, you know, other people might look at it, it's to drive the business, to drive the profits, which that's part of our role. But I believe if you're a servant leader, that's going to happen. And if that same thing happens from our general managers, our senior leaders, then to our general managers, everyone else who's receiving that, the associates, are going to be that kind of a life and that kind of a personality. And if that's the case, we're going to get to the guests. So I truly believe that it's... Mr. Merritt says it, and said it for 80 years now, that take care of your associates, they'll take care of the guests, and the guests will keep coming back.
So it's interesting, because I think almost foundationally at the core of that concept is a level of autonomy, which I think a lot of leaders struggle with providing, even to their senior leadership, that I don't want to say hands-off approach, because it's not a hands-off approach, but more the approach of, tell me what you need, tell me how I can support you, and let me support you in that way, but a trust of your leader's judgment. Would you agree that that kind of is where it starts, and then that flows down?
Yeah, I think it's an earned trust. And we onboard a new leader, the window's a little shorter for them to make decisions. You know, it's like you're not going to make a $50,000 decision. And over time, I mean, a lot of our leaders are making $50,000 decisions without me. But that's earned over time, and that's working back and forth. So I do think that it takes time. But having that autonomy to make decisions on that location, and if something goes awry, doesn't mean it was wrong. It just means that maybe we got to look at a better decision next time.
Yeah, and learning from that choice as to what we learned from it in order to make more informed decisions in the future.
I mean, some of us have been around for a while, 31 years. We've made a lot more mistakes than most, and so we do a little better at making those decisions. But and we just try to guide people to say, okay, let's see if you can do it in 15 years.
Exactly. And I think one of the interesting parts, and this goes to kind of a theory or concept that I like to focus on, at least in my professional life and in my personal life, and people are going to laugh, but like, if you're not failing, are you reaching far enough? And that doesn't mean that I want to lose cases for clients or anything along those lines, but those personal stretches about like, okay, if you make the ask and you get a no, then you've made the ask at least, and you're going from there. But I think that it does go to the autonomy and hoping that people are going to learn when they do make the mistake. But if you never provide them with an opportunity to make a mistake, they're not going to grow as leaders.
Right.
When you look, however, at some of your top employees, some of your top leaders, and maybe they're not leaders, because I think that we focus sometimes too much on people being really good at their job and putting them in leadership positions, as opposed to focusing on people who maybe are really good at their job but aren't great leaders, right? But when you look at some of your top employees, are there character traits or things that they do consistently that in your mind stands out and makes them kind of that much greater?
To me, I think a real important thing is are they taking care of their people, whatever level that they're at. If they're at a front desk associate, are they the best at what they do? And B, have they earned the respect of the people around them? And do they care about the other people? Are they being a servant leader? I mean, it doesn't have to be that they're a role as a leader, but they have to be a servant leader at the front desk. Same thing, when I look, I don't do a whole lot of interviewing with associates and that kind of stuff anymore. But when I talk to someone, I want to find out about them. I want to find out what kind of leader I am. And through trying to ask questions that lead me to find out, what have they done for other people? Have they done things? So to me, that's a real critical part of it.
Now, when you find that you're kind of having those discussions or when you're witnessing things, does that create, I don't want to say fear in your associates, but how do you get to a level where you're witnessing front desk or housekeeping associates and there's not fear that the CEO is standing next to them or witnessing these day-to-day tasks? Because I think a lot of leaders, unfortunately, maybe show up and they don't get a true view of what their organization looks like because they're seeing best quality work or they're seeing a performance, I guess would be the best way to put it, because, hey, the boss is here.
Well, that does happen. And I keep forget, you know, sometimes I forget. I mean, I run a big company. But to me, I'd much rather come up and I wouldn't tell my HR attorney this, but I mean, I'll get a hug when I go in from a lot of people, guys, girls, it doesn't matter. And they always tell them it's on the second or third time. We don't get them the first time I meet you, second time. So. But I think we openly just embrace who we are and what we are. And I try to, when we're opening a hotel, I mean, I'm moving boxes. I'm the only one that gets to drive the forklift. And I do pull rank on that. I want the forklift. But I think when they see that kind of thing, they see that I'm not that guy. I don't want to be ever on an undercover boss and not be known. And if people know me for who I am, they've seen us in crazy videos, and I play Bruno Mars or Justin Timberlake in different videos that we have. They're seeing a different side of me. They're seeing the fun side of our values, and it kind of takes a little bit of that pressure. And I think that's what separates our company a little bit, is that it's not just me. Everybody's doing that, and we're just having a good time.
But let's go back to that. I mean, I don't know if any of our listeners would believe I'm doing my job if I let the if I let you say when they see me as Bruno Mars or Justin Timberlake. I mean, so your four pillars are respect, integrity, fun, and family. Let's focus on that fun, because it sounds like the organization's employees are seeing multiple sides of you, but how do you create an atmosphere in which they're looking at you as Bruno Mars or Justin Timberlake?
If they look at me as I'm just one of them. I mean, I have done that. I've plunged the toilet. I've made the beds. I've done the pools. If they see that, so that's important for us, that it can't be just fake. But we do company videos every year, and we're working on one now. We do the Cup Song. No one knows this yet, but the Cup Song with Anna Kenner.
Okay. So,
I can't do it yet, but I will.
Okay.
But
working towards it.
Yeah, but we do. The Bruno Mars thing is just a fun thing, and it's not that I'm necessarily in the video with them. It's the fact that I'm doing the film. I'm cutting it, I'm putting it together, and I'm side by side having fun with the associates putting this together. And they see a different side. And they're not seeing the guy who, yeah, I still have to answer to the P&L. I still have to answer to the investors. But I believe if we take care of them and they're all having fun, the investors are going to be better off. And they have been so far.
Now, when we talk about those ideal employees, the people who are doing the right thing, who are positively impacting lives on a daily basis, let's talk about the people who maybe aren't. And how do you help those underperforming employees hit or reach or thrive to meet the values of the organization, recognizing that in all cases that might not be possible? But what are some tools that you found that have been successful to help people integrate into your culture and understand that this is not just lip service, but it's something that you expect from your employees?
There are lots of people. In fact, we had an opening of a hotel, and one of the senior leaders was there, and she said, you know, if you're not having fun, if you don't really like to have fun, you probably shouldn't be here. This is day one. Day two, two people called up and said, I don't want to go. I don't want to have fun. And that's probably a good thing, because if the personality doesn't fit, I mean, they're never going to be servant leaders. They're not going to be fun with the guests. So all of that's real important. And I think the way we do it is that, to me, I go back to my former life as a teacher and as a coach and all that, and that people are different and they need to be coached. And my role is not necessarily to coach. It would be kind of scary for a front desk associate, me going to coach him on how to do something. But if we can work with those kids, and our teams are coaching and guiding people along, I would much rather take a person who can't do the job, whether it be a P&L analysis or a checking someone and checking going. We can take that person if they've got a personality and if they've got true values to become something. They may never become the president or the GM, but they can grow. If they don't have that personality stuff, that's not going to be good for our guests. It's not going to be good for other associates. And sometimes it's just not the people, and that's okay. The people in the world need to be that way, just not with our organization.
I think that's a really interesting concept. And as you were speaking, it brought to top of mind an article I recently read in Harvard Business Review that discussed the fact that traditionally the concept or idea that after you perform an interview, kind of that expectation that you receive something from the interviewee, a note or email or something thanking you for the time that you spent. And there being these groups or organizations that say that if I don't get that letter or email, they're out. They're out no matter what. But a change in the concept or idea that we as the organization are actually the ones who are sending the letter or email after the interview, thanking the applicant for his or her time. And the difference in how that conveys who you are and what your culture is as an organization. And I think it's so telling to have an organization that on that first day, or even I think at the interview stage, right, says this is who we are and you seem to fit that bill, but are you sure that we're the right place for you, by being clear as to what you value and what you don't value? Do you think that there's value in sharing your values right at the beginning, right there, to make sure that fun and family and respect and integrity are concepts or ideas that applicants can live with?
Absolutely. We do talk about that. Every time my interviews are a different level, but that's, I usually try to find out from them what they have, you know, what's their why. I think anybody, if there's anything I can say to anybody out in the listening field there, that find out your why, what's important to you, and that's going to help you through no matter what the job is. But to get back to it, I think we as a group, we do a lot of that. We'll have even at the ground level of each hotel, we'll send a note out to people, especially people you really want. And it's a postcard. And it just says, thanks for considering us. Thanks for joining us. It could be right after they get hired. And I do that as well. And I typically, when I send notes to associates or to leaders or whatever, I'll send it to their home. We just had a recent, and we typically at the general manager level, and even at the office managers and the sales directors, we'll ask them to call our hotels. And I typically will say, call any hotel. Talk to a general manager, front office manager, anything. You have to make sure it works for you, because we might get excited about you being on our team, but you got to make, you're buying this. We like longevity. We like people to be around for a while. And it's pretty neat to have that happen. They just call them. They talk, is the general manager in, or is the front office man? I said, I don't care if you talk to a front desk associate. And you know, there might be times that it didn't work, but for the most part, I know our leaders feel that way. And I know that's pretty, pretty good. It's like you're the emperor with no clothes. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can come look at our whole organization, talk to anybody you want, make sure it fits for you. Because then when that happens, that's kind of a marriage that's there. It's not just us wanting them. And it's mentioning notes, I do a lot of notes to associates or leaders when I hear things. And most every general manager, and usually a salesperson, I send a note home thanking them for joining our team. Part of that is they're given a 2-week notice. You know someone's going to come back and ask them to say they want to know that we really do like you.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's usually if you found out something in an interview about a kid, I still have back from my way back days when I was a muffin man in Freeport. I still have stickers left over that. So I'll send them stickers to the sales director we just had. So, in fact, she said, I told her that. I said, you know, we've got twins. I said, we could have a play date. We've got a 2.5-year-old. And in my mind, we have a 2.5-year-old grandson. And she saw me online. She goes, boy, that guy, look at him. He's got a 2.5-year-old. He must have a young wife. I said, well, I do. She's my wife for 41 years. But I think you're hitting something different when you're talking to something that's personal, something that's inside. And if everyone in our organization does that, that culture is going to stay alive, whether it's funny stickers or, you know, or anything.
I think it's a really interesting pointer. Something that we don't focus on enough in that onboarding time. I mean, onboarding a new employee is a lot of paperwork, a lot of training, kind of a lot of information really fast. And I would imagine that the concept or idea of getting this handwritten note at home from another leader in the organization or the CEO has significant value. And have you gotten that feedback from employees after they've received it as to how it made them feel kind of at that early stage in their career with the organization?
Well, I hope they're receiving, yes, they have. But I also hope they're seeing the same thing as that, oh, I should be doing that too. And then if they're doing that to the next person, and I was just at one of our hotels, the one that's opening, and I looked at a bunch of cards, and all the people that they had hired, they're writing cards, personal cards to every one of them. And I thought, that's exactly, and it's worked its way all the way through a brand new property. We do also do other stuff. We have, I send a birthday card to every associate. That's 800 associates that we have. And obviously there's a couple hundred that probably come in and out. And I get that on my desk every month. Someone else puts it together. But it's so important to the people.
This is so, so interesting and fun to hear. We're going to take a quick break, though. You're listening to HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
This tax season, AutoZone has everything your car needs. Did you know that with the Loaner Tool program at AutoZone, you can borrow a specialty tool with no purchase necessary? Choose from over 100 tools to help you get the job done right, no matter how big or small. And right now, get 5.25 ounces of Lucas Complete Field Treatment for $4.99 each, or two for $8. Visit any of our 5,000 locations nationwide, and let's get you what you need. Deposit required. Restrictions and details in store.
Get in the zone. Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking today to Sean Riley, President and CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group. And we've been talking about maintaining a strong culture while your organization grows. Before the break, we are talking kind of generally about leadership style and specifically kind of how we engage employees even before they're employees in what our value and our mission and our purpose is. And Sean, you were just talking about kind of that outreach to employees right at the beginning when they're onboarding, that personal note, and even went a step further and started talking about how you send a handwritten birthday card to your employees on their birthday every year. And I think that that's great. And I want to focus a little bit more about, like, what's the reaction been to that type of behavior? I would presume it's appreciated, but are people telling you this, or does it kind of go by the wayside?
When I walk into my office, I just walked in this morning after being away for the week, and another pile of cards, like 80, 90 cards. And part of it's like, oh. But then I think, but what gets me out of that is when I get a reaction. Every time I do a birthday card, every month, when I visit a property, it's mentioned by somebody on the field. I've had texts, I've had emails, I've had voicemails, and I've even gone into property. I had a guy a year or so ago, and he said, you know, I really appreciate that birthday card. And that's what they usually say. And I said, well, it's great. And I mean, I do write a personal note. I don't just sign it. To them, I mean, some of them I don't know, so I have to just sign my name and mention something. But this guy said, no, I really appreciate it. He said, normally my birthday, I always had a card for my mother. And I got home that day, and I went to the mailbox, and it was no card for my mother. And he said, and I got the only thing that was in there was a card from you. And I'm like, wow, that's really. And he said, and what really made it more important was that my girlfriend had just broken up with me, and so I got a breakup. I didn't get a card from my mother. I had a birthday card from you, and I just want to let you know how much it means. And how can I not do 70, 80 birthday cards when that kind of response you get?
I tell you what, David has a rule that I'm not supposed to cry on the radio show, but this is the second time I've broken it. But I think sometimes as leaders, we forget the fact that all of our employees have personal lives and they have things that are going on in their lives that are difficult and that they're doing the best they can, maybe not to bring into the work environment, but it doesn't mean that those issues aren't there and that we can't provide support during those difficult times, whether or not we know that it's occurring or not.
Yeah, a guy that Kevin, one of the senior leaders, and he always talks about how we're really a counselor. You can't say what's going to happen when you go into an office any day. You know, the housekeeper could have just been beaten. It could have, someone just lost a child. They lost something in their family. And our roles are not just clean the rooms, make the beds, make some money. If we take care of those associates, they're going to take care of the guests, and the guests keep coming back, and then we're going to make money. So it should be done in that order as well. And so, that's what I think the whole purpose as a company is to positively impact lives. We're going to start with our associates.
And I think that that's a really kind of good purpose and something that sometimes we lose sight of when we're talking about P&Ls. And when we talk about what our assets is, I always laugh. And from my position, I mean, as an employment lawyer, the concept of our employees, our staff is our greatest asset and simultaneously can be our greatest liability. But I think that if you look and focus on them as an asset and the investment that we make in them as people emotionally and from a strength in the position, I mean, I think you're decreasing the chances that they ever become a liability for your organization.
Yeah, we have 22 hotels, beautiful hotels, you know, really nice. But if you go into most management company, you see those beautiful hotels. That's what comes up. But if you go to our website, you'll find that it's pictures of people, stories about their personal lives. No, and we got a guy that's Cornell. That's not mentioned in there. He's talking about his family, what's important to him, right down to we have associates and front office managers. And then there is a place where we have our hotels, but it's kind of secondary because that's really, you're right, our assets are really our people.
I mean, I think it's great to have this discussion, and it, I think, brings me a lot of hope. And there's been moments during the course of our discussion that I've gotten goosebumps about kind of how exciting it is and feeling that kind of relationship, that family and fun relationship in a work environment. At the same time, however, I'm guessing there's been an evolution of this management vision or concept. Has that occurred over your career, or would you say that fairly consistently for the last 30 years, this has been your focus?
I'd say pieces of it have changed. I think, like I said, I think we articulate it much better now, and we've made it simpler so people can really, you know, respond. But we had a mission way back, and it all evolved around the same thing. You know, it was not a big deal. So I think it's always been, the root of that has been there. It's just been slightly tweaks. And I think that's better, because if you come up with a flavor of the month and everything's different every 5 years, you change your logo, you change your this, and you're a new company. We do change our logos, but we try not to change what's really important to us.
So when we're talking about these kind of large scale vision, purpose, those type of things, I always like to go to the leader and find out if there's been a mentor or a sponsor in your life who has helped to shape your management philosophy and how you run the organization.
I figured that would be a question, and I don't have one. I've learned from so many people. My mother and father were both totally different people. My father was uneducated. My mother was educated. But I learned a lot from them. And I see some of the crazy stuff I do. It was just like my father used to do crazy stuff. But I never think he did Bruno Mars. But I think, you know, early on, is that my first job was a superintendent of schools. And I went to see him recently just before he passed away at 92. I went to him and thanked him for what he did for me. And I visited my first boss, a special ed teacher recently. She's in her 80s. And we just chatted and we talked about it. And my previous boss, Jack, he was a big mentor to me and our partners. I have people in some of our associates just really impact me in so many ways. And that's pretty cool. And it doesn't matter whether it's someone who's 80 or 90 and someone who's 22 years old that can impact my life and help mentor me, maybe not mentor, but give me guidance in life some way.
And help to change or pivot some of your philosophy. Would you agree with some of that kind of concept?
I think tweak the philosophy. It's not going to change my purpose I have my why, and that evolves. It doesn't have to be hotels. It could be something else. Now it's my grandchildren. That's my new why, but that can still fit into everything I have.
So we have been talking a lot about all of the positive attributes and the purpose and the mission and these pillars and values. And I think that's great, because I think focusing on the positive is really important. But at the same time, I'm guessing there have been challenges and some significant challenges. What would you say has been the most challenging aspect of your career with Main Course Hospitality Group?
With Main Course, I think we had some ups and downs. We had the cycles like everybody else in the business, and then trying to maintain our culture and who we were and not let it change, even though we had to make changes because of difficult times. So those are difficult times, and we've enjoyed the last 10 years, like a lot of people in our industry have enjoyed the rise and the thing. But we have to continue to focus on that same mission and same purpose and values in good times and in bad. You know, we may not be throwing the fun stuff, the big parties or the big meetings and those kind of things that we would. But so what's difficult to me, though, I think, is finding people that buy into that culture in a very difficult job market at the ground level. And I keep going back to the same thing, that we have to focus on who we are, what we are, and sell that message.
And in selling that message, I mean, we're currently at a time in which, at least in New England, you know, the job market is tight. The unemployment is low. It's in a lot of industries difficult to get the right talent for the right positions. And a lot of companies are, you know, identifying people and specifically going after them. Is there something that Main Course Hospitality's group is doing that might be a little bit different, that other than being itself to attract and retain these people? How do you, I guess maybe the question is, how do you advertise or promote who you are in order to make sure that people know that and want to work with you?
I think on the leadership side, we don't get poached much. And people do that. They look for people, and you get the job recruiters and all. But in general, we don't lose anybody to that. We've all had opportunities, including myself. And I think because of that, the longevity is there because of what they believe in. And we pay fairly. We're not the highest paid, and we're not the lowest paid. We pay fairly. But I think when people feel good about where they are, the money's not always the most important. But you can't get someone to come in at housekeeping and have that understood. So our role is to make sure that everybody in an organization, all the way down to the people hiring housekeeping teams or the maintenance or whatever, that they have that same belief. And some of that is there. And I think the best source of a job recruitment is through your current associates. You know, if somebody feels good and they say, hey, I'd like to work for that company. You know, and the people kind of stalk. I do the Facebook thing for Main Course, and when we grow, and people get stalked. And I think that's a great thing. That's because we're talking about the message that's important to us. We're not talking about making money, hourly wage or anything. people come to us as a management company. They ask us to work with them. How much would you charge? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, let's find out if we like each other first. Yeah. You know, it's far more important to do that.
We are going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Sean Riley, President and CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsandme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking to Sean Riley, President and CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group. And today we've spent the episode discussing maintaining a strong culture while your organization grows and develops, both regionally in the space that it occupies within the market, and also from the size of the number of employees that you engage and who work with you. Sean and I have been talking a lot about culture and values. And one of the things that he has mentioned consistently is that why, and returning to the why. And earlier in the episode, you may have caught that his current why is his grandchildren. I guess this leads me to, I think, what will probably be my final question, but I never say it is my final one in case I have follow-up ones. If you weren't the CEO of Main Course Hospitality Group or in the hospitality business or field, what would you be doing and why?
I think the why is important in someone's life. And I think as a career person, as a person, I think early on in my career, I worked really hard and worked too much. And I felt kind of bad about that with my kids. My kids are great. They came out fine. They're both in the business with us. But on the grandson time, I'm saying I'm making this important. So, I mean, I do include business. I mean, he went down and punched out a hotel room with me on Saturday. He walked through a construction site. He had a hard hat on. So there is.
I hope you got pictures of that.
I did, yeah. And it's funny. He's kind of bending over and it looks like a construction worker, but with a hard hat. But that was real important. And I have another one coming Monday. But,
congratulations.
And she's a girl and we'll get a hard hat on her too.
Perfect.
So I think the idea of giving back, I've had so many people throughout my career that have helped me personally and professionally. And everybody has their own little thing that they've done. In fact, the guy that works with Dave is Dale Carnegie. He's Dave Searns. He's a friend of mine. And he gave a lot to me, taught me a lot. And people over my career have done that. And so I need to be that person, whether it's just helping someone through a hump. And I don't need to make money for it a lot of times. And I was just thinking, I've volunteered a few times just to help someone. I said, look, I'll help you. I don't have to pay me anything. Or, we'll just do it. We can't do anything as a company, but maybe I can. So I think that part of it, and it goes back to that purpose for our company and me personally, is to positively impact lives. And maybe I just impact some people in a different way. Not in managing, but if I can, get one person who's maybe struggling with something and maybe turn it around for them and they can become successful. When I was a teacher, I had kids that dealt with, that had learning disabilities, and I loved hearing it. Maybe they're saying that, you really made a difference, and they're 50 years old now and very successful. And so I guess that to me is probably more important for me going forward is my grandchildren, my kids, and other people.
I think it's really interesting kind of turning the question around on me so that this doesn't become a second question, just kind of discussion about the last one, about the concept or idea of it maybe not being what the job is or what the career is, but really going back to that underlying why. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing whatever it is you're doing? And can you have that same why value without regard to what the job or the experience or the title is?
Yeah, I think... I look back at my career as a teacher, and that helped me to who I've become as a leader, as a person. And I think that evolution over time, each role I've had or each thing I've done has come back to that. And so I think that to me can happen into my 80s. I don't have to retire.
Hopefully well beyond that as well.
Yeah. Well, I told people, I told everyone, I'm going to semi-retire at 70. I'm going to take weekends off. And then at 80, I'm going to retire. And at 84, I'm going to die so my wife can have some of the money that's left over.
Perfect. Well, you've got it all planned out.
So I still have some years ahead of me.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners have appreciated hearing both about Main Course Hospitality Group, its purpose, its value, and generally some of your leadership philosophy and how you evolve as an organization and grow while still maintaining a culture and pillars that in fact include, the concept of family and fun. Because I think both of those pillars maybe are sometimes overshadowed by the principles of integrity, responsibility, and more of the business type focused concepts, I guess would be the best way to describe it. So thank you so much, Sean.
It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Welcome to management. Here are your keys, here are your alarm codes, and here is your lawyer. Hi, I'm Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. Frequent listeners to this program will remember that we have been talking about individual supervisor liability and discrimination cases for several years now. We've been saying that the law is coming, but here we are, and now the law is here. Individual supervisory liability raises many questions for the employer. The first of which is, should I extend my legal defenses to the supervisor who has been named individually in the lawsuit? There are many cases in which an employer might be legally bound to extend legal defenses to the supervisor, but there are also some circumstances in which the supervisor is accused of acting so egregiously that the employer may not want to extend their own legal protections to that supervisor. Got a question about individual supervisor liability? Call Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.